Welcome to Oz NFTs, NFTs are for everyone podcast.
Every week, we'll bring you Australian artists, collectors, and builders that are paving the way in the Web3 space.
We'll go deep into their stories, how they're reshaping digital culture, and how you can get involved.
Welcome to the Oz NFT podcast, Samira. Today we have the pleasure of sharing time with Samira Tolo, CTO and co-founder of Elbate. Elbate is an Australian-owned, non-custodial exchange that allows users to buy, trade crypto directly from their own wallet. Stop me if I'm incorrect as well.
All correct
so far. wonderful. This challenges the current model where exchanges hold your coins for you while you trade. In other words, Elbate is a platform that ensures your wallet, your crypto trading, removing the risk of Quadriga-style exchange vanishing acts. You might be familiar with these issues from the popular Netflix documentary CryptoKitties. Truly innovative and currently celebrating the second round of capital investment with the newly appointed board of directors. Samira, welcome and thank you for joining us on this beautiful day in Brisbane.
Thank you. Pretty excited to be connected with you both. I love that you are both really passionate about this space and wanting to make a real change with Australia. So I'm so happy to be here.
We appreciate that.
Amazing. Thank you.
Amazing. Yeah, I think that's what it's all about, right? When you're connecting with other young, bright and keen people, true magic can really come of that. And I'm really keen to dive into how you actually got here today. So leading to my first question is, you actually have an incredible story with true tests of grit, character, perseverance, that have given no doubt a unique perspective and your attitude towards building. Would you mind sharing your origin story and getting here as a young woman and pioneering in the fintech, crypto, Web3 space, as it certainly didn't start like that?
Yeah, okay, origin story. Quite a couple, so the word to describe my origin story is just me seeking out my passion. My passion was always wanting to create really positive impact at a large scale for the world. From a young child, that was always been my goal and ambition. So when I was younger, I came across engineering. My dad was an engineer, and everything that I brought up to him, he would fix it. I was like, see, that's net positive.
That's amazing.
Right? So I was like, all right, I'm going to be an engineer. Engineers fix things. I want to fix things. And then I was like, okay, what do I want to fix? And when we were growing up as millennials or Gen Z, whatever I am, there was that whole global warming was a big topic when we were growing up, right? So that really inspired me going, okay, this is a really big global problem. I want to solve that. I want to be part of the people that are passionate about that. So that led me to electrical engineering, and I wanted to specifically focus on renewable energies. So that's what I did. I achieved it. And then I worked at a renewable energy generation company in Brisbane here. Beautiful little company, very small scale, surprisingly, for what they do. But then through that, I came across a blockchain company that, and this is another beautiful Australian homegrown story, which is called PowerLedger.
PowerLedger.
Yeah.
Shout out PowerLedger.
Love PowerLedger so much. And they pioneered years ago, right? So what they do is they solve the transactional problem with homes generating their own solar power. Like, how do you monetize that? How do you make sure that everybody's getting the fair price and the market making, the market taking? That's a very blockchain type of problem, right?
Absolutely.
And then so they solved that with blockchain. So I was like, oh, blockchain's cool. So it just perfectly aligned my curiosity with blockchain with my brother's story. He's got his own fascinating story about crypto. It's the origin story for the company. So he was curious in his own way, and he created a solution for an exchange problem. Brought it up to me over dinner one day, and I was like, let's do it.
Casual dinner conversation.
Yeah.
How are we going to fix the blockchain problem? You're like, I'm on.
Let's do it.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. This is great dinner conversation.
Family of fixing problems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Smashing it out. I love it.
Exactly.
Did you want to keep going? Sorry.
So yeah, I'll just leave it like there. So from dinner to now, that was 4.5 years ago.
How long does it feel? Does it feel like 5 years or 50?
How long does it feel? Honestly, I think lockdowns have warped my time frame, so I feel like it's only been 2.5 years.
Okay, you know? All right. That's not too bad. Yeah. That's not what we hear from most people in the space.
No.
They feel like 6 months for like 6 years, so you're doing well. You're doing well.
The opposite for me.
So 2017, you guys co-founded Elbay together over the dinner table,
mm-hmm.
and you thought, this is aligning with my serious conviction to want to solve problems, work on, I guess, environmental solutions within a fintech kind of company. And did you have that immediate conviction when your brother was kind of exploring this with you, or did it take a little bit of time to warm up to that?
Yeah, so the reason why I was so compelled to make that huge change from electrical engineering to a fintech is really because of the horrible problem that he was facing.
What was that problem?
So he was a crypto trader, miner since 2013.
So he's an OG.
Yeah, very, very OG. So he started mining Bitcoin all those years ago, and how do you cash that out? You go to an exchange. The exchanges that were available back then, they were very centralized, and probably even you could say their technology was not sophisticated.
Mm, definitely not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that unsophistication and that centralized nature of those exchanges, so this is what you do. You're a crypto miner, you've got crypto, you want to get some cash out of that, so you send that crypto to the centralized exchange, and then when the price is right, you cash it out for fiat, right? So you're storing it with this entity. Those exchanges, there are several of them, just one after the other.
Mm.
Oh, sorry guys, blanket email to everybody, we've halted withdrawals, you can't use your account anymore, we'll tell you later. Mm. Months would pass, and then finally they would reveal that they got hacked,
mm.
and you got no money. Like, you're just a humble user, and you get screwed like that,
mm.
right? So it just, and the numbers that he was dealing with was significant. So I was like, if you are one person who's dealing with this, I'm sure there's so many like you. So yeah, I just thought the problem was so bad. I wanted to be part of that.
So a big problem in the space regarding self-custody, and yeah. then sort of Elbabe was born. Can you tell us a little about that story, the story about the name, mm. the significance of it, and how you guys decided to jump in?
Yeah. So from that problem going, okay, there's a centralization problem here for a decentralized currency.
Doesn't really make sense, right? It's, yeah, for everyone involved.
Are we going backwards?
Yeah. We're trading this awesome decentralized coin,
yeah.
but we're all on centralized exchanges.
One step forward, two steps back. So the model that my brother came up with, he was like, okay, let's maintain decentralization throughout the whole process. I want to sell my crypto. How about I only sell it to the person that will buy it? So at the point, so the way that Elbay is constructed is we have a fiat escrow bank account that buyers will deposit their money in, and then we notify the seller of the crypto to say, hey, the fiat has been escrowed. You can send that crypto to the buyer's wallet address, and then we verify via the blockchain that transaction has happened and the buyer has received their crypto. Beautiful. And then we release the fiat escrow to the seller. Like, how good? It's so simple.
Peer-to-peer.
Yes.
Sounds much like Bitcoin. That's what it was meant to do.
Yes.
That's a wonderful idea.
Yeah.
And you guys seem like both of you together built this. Did you just get to work straight away? And you kind of essentially like, all right, cool, this needs to happen. You pull in your skills of electrical engineering and your understanding and interest in blockchain. And how did you kind of start to get that ball rolling?
Yeah, how do we get a ball rolling? Well, to be honest, at the end of the day, this is a startup and it's more a fintech rather than a blockchain project. And it's really because we deal with people's money,
mm.
people's Australian fiat. So for that reason, we joined a startup community in Stone & Chalk.
Cool.
So shout out to Stone & Chalk. They've been absolutely amazing for us. Through the mentoring network that they provided us, we quickly understood that, oh, okay, there's a lot of regulation in that fiat side. We have to have all that homework ready. So we connected with lawyers that were dealing with this new type of money movement, crypto, and there's only a few. So the legal team that we used was Hall & Wilcox. So they had a really innovative legal team that were also looking at crypto and crypto exchanges and how that all works. So we were able to leverage off their knowledge. So you really need a lot of people to be involved to create a company, right? And so if we didn't have all of everybody else also interested in blockchain, I don't think we could have made all that happen.
I'm just so interested in how you and your brother got started from such a young age. Can you talk to a little bit about some of those challenges that you faced getting started? How did you build out that network to have all those partners that were interested in getting involved and sort of, yeah, just a little bit on that.
The whole being young thing, I used to think that it was a negative, but now that I'm a little bit older, I'm going, oh, it was the biggest benefit ever. Pete, we talked about that it was blissful. No, the ignorance was what helped, right?
Yeah.
The ignorance was a superpower, actually, because now knowing how difficult the journey has been, I don't think I would have started it. So that's the thing. Just have a go.
Yeah, I love that. I love that ethos. And that actually brings me to my next kind of question, where being an entrepreneur can actually be quite, at the start, it's quite romanticized. I think there's a lot of allure about it, where you can just dive into something and you've got that young drive, that innovation, that spark, right? But there's the other side of entrepreneurship where it's actually can be lonely, can be depressing. There is no stability. It's either you're growing or you're dying. And did you find, we've been blessed to be working together, but working with your brother, did you experience some of these challenges? And how is that working with, I guess, someone who's so close to you as well? You both share the same common passion. How did you kind of go through and navigate that space, especially being so young?
I think what I'm going to say, you both will agree as well, that you need a co-founder that you trust.
Yeah, absolutely. It's
fundamental.
Yeah. Doing it solo is almost impossible. And this is a problem that I hear a lot of startup founders that want to get their startup to a position where it's actually a team. They go, I need a co-founder. How do I find a co-founder? And the thing is, honestly, I don't have any tips around that because I was just blessed that it was my brother. And no matter how difficult the journey was going to be, we were both in it. It's a shared goal. Do you feel you're incredibly blessed to find each other in this shared goal?
Fundamentally.
Absolutely, yeah. Been through other business ventures where you learn very quickly that you need to understand who that person is and just trust that they're going to have your back no matter what the circumstances are. It's really important. I worked with my family for quite a few years as well.
Okay.
And I had a really amazing experience with that. But I had a lot of people around me who you could say didn't have that same experience, especially in the hospitality restaurant industry. Have you had any challenges working with family, or has it been pretty smooth sailing for the most part?
So for us, it's been really good because we're so different. So he's got that business accounting background and finance, and I've got the technical side. So it's just the perfect balance, I think. And even our egos are different. He's a lot more of an introvert, perfectionist, I think, and visually sees things. I'm visually mute. I don't see detail visually at all. It's totally different. So I think because we're insanely different, that's why it works.
On that family note, both your parents are, as you mentioned, your dad was an engineer, helped problem solve and kind of really instilling some confidence in you from a young age, and your mum was also a teacher?
Yeah. My mum, she was a maths and physics teacher. That's awesome that she's in a very male kind of topic. But more that her attitude to life was just always like, it's tough, get over it. Like,
yeah.
You know, so
wow.
That kind of attitude was amazing to grow up with.
Yeah. A strong female foundation, I think, can provide just as much strength as a male, right? They both complement each other so well when they're working together.
Absolutely.
For your best interest.
Yeah.
That's incredible. And you had quite a unique life experience in coming here as well.
Did that give you a very pragmatic, problem and solution orientated mind frame that carried on to this venture?
So a big part of who I am, I guess, is the immigrant story that we have. And I think a lot of immigrants would share the same sentiment as I do. We're very, very grateful for the life that we have. So my family, I was born in Afghanistan. My family were in Afghanistan and they had a chance to get out of all of that war that they had been experiencing. So I think my parents had around 15 years of war before they were able to get out of Australia, get out of the situation and come to Australia. I mean, that's a long time of just horror and stress, and the stories are insane. It's like they were living underground for a year and like just no hospitals. Like, it's just wild stories, right? So it's absolutely credit to them and their sheer perseverance to want the best for their children. I can't take any of that credit. Like, I'm just blessed that I was born into such a lucky situation. Like, I could have been any other Afghan that is still living in Afghanistan, right? But I was born into that situation where I'm now in Australia, and I grew up most of my life in Australia. So we moved here when I was 5 years old.
Wow.
So I'm 25 now, so that's 20 years of awesome life, and just having the both perspective of how horrible life can possibly be. And also the other perspective of how awesome life can be as well.
Yeah.
So that was really powerful.
Really operating from a place of gratitude, humbleness, and love.
Yeah.
I think the love from your parents as well to ultimately support you and just want to see the best for you.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine. There must be an incredible rocks foundation for you to kind of always console in and give you support and love and encouragement. That's truly powerful. I'm truly moved by that story. That's parents' love is something incredible.
I just love that your brother are both taking that opportunity and just making the absolute most out of it.
Yeah.
It's beautiful to see.
Yeah.
It's really, really cool.
Yeah, hell yeah. It kind of brings me to my next question. You are a passionate problem solver. I'm just giving you that label. You don't have to agree, but I am assuming as such you'd have to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back to the years. Yes, definitely. That's the passion that is the label that I go with. The bigger the problem, the more worthy it is to solve it.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that answer. I love that answer. And as you've gone through, I guess, these levels, right, in business, in electrical engineering, and starting to scale up and build, do you find the complexity and layers of problems you're experiencing now are getting more complicated, more challenging? And each one that you successively solve, you're just getting rewarded with tougher and more complex problems.
With startup journey, people say that there's distinct stages, right? Your MVP stage, your seed stage, your all those labels. Actually, there's so many more micro stages in between, right? Like, there's the stage of your very first transaction.
Mm-hmm.
Your very first customer.
Yes.
Oh my God, euphoria. We used to celebrate one transaction a day. Oh my God. And it was like, we would look at the logs on the back end, line by line, every single log that's happening throughout that transaction, like monitoring, like that intense, right? And then to now it's where, it's too much activity. You have to now look at the day's worth, the week's worth, the month's worth, because it's too much to look at per transaction. Right, so yeah, there it's different stages.
Yeah, what kind of problems do you enjoy solving?
So this current problem that we are solving, I think it's becoming more and more relevant as crypto is becoming more and more popular. It was really interesting. So when we first started the exchange, the reason was crypto exchange hacks. hacks are becoming less and less. You know, the exchanges are becoming more and more sophisticated, as they should. It is their responsibility to make sure that their customers' assets are protected at a software level. So that sophistication is happening. That's awesome to see. So that was the first reason. But it's been really cool. So the DeFi journey has also made Elevate really relevant. To participate in DeFi, you have to withdraw your assets to your own wallet, right? So there was a whole movement, and you could see it. The amount of crypto that was stored in exchanges reduced dramatically when DeFi became popular.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
So that was really awesome. So that brought in a wave of new users. And then the next wave was the NFT users. I adore the NFT users so much because they are the most educated. They have to know self-custody straight away. They have to know the minting process straight away, right? Like, there's so much technical knowledge that goes into NFTs.
It's an interesting point you raise.
Yeah.
It's an interesting point you raise. I guess us, we kind of natively, well, I did, but I guess you were like the idea of gas fees, understanding like you've got to do a transaction by yourself. I guess NFT is a natural evolution of crypto, and then you had a market seemingly green just immediately hop on because there was like a need, mm-hmm. right? That kind of facilitated this whole new wave. And do you find that with the advent of, I guess, popularity of NFTs, this has created a new wave of, I guess, interested parties and people a little bit more kind of innovative and creative within the NFT space?
So the NFT space, like we touched on, they are the most technically understanding group of, of the cohorts, because there's a lot of self, everybody owns these things on their own, and so they have to do everything on their own, right? So I love that aspect of them, but the issue that I do see that both DeFi and NFT groups are having is they're just building in the world of on-chain, fully on-chain, right? And it's awesome. That's really, really good, because why do you want to stop that crazy innovation that's happening? We don't want to stop that. But then coming into the world of how do you pay your bills? That is that roadmap that hasn't been fully solved. So we at Elevate are really, really interested in creating gateways for them to transact between the two worlds.
Mm. That Web 2 to Web 3 kind of transition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing is, because we know how much headache it is to deal with fiat, it is in the community's best interest that DeFi and NFT projects integrate with exchanges or institutions that have already built all of that fiat sophistication. Partner with them, don't reinvent the wheel, yeah. Don't slow your business down, partner with them, because it takes years.
Do you think that also, in that sense of ownership and self-custody, actually contributed to the commitment that people have to their project, their NFT project, the idea that they actually own it, it's not just being hosted on an exchange, it's kind of creating a sense of self-accountability, and then that's was the hand that ultimately gave the user the incentive to bring themselves up to speed and really figure out what these technical details are and then ultimately contribute into the space. Mm-hmm. Do you think that sense of ownership has contributed to this growth of the industry?
Well, that's the thing. It's going back home, right? It's, yeah. The idea is finally coming back to what it's supposed to be, self-sovereignty, yeah. Right? And it's taken years to have communities understand this, the real reason for why crypto is popular. But maybe this is the natural progression that we needed to have. We needed centralized projects to fail to get that perspective, right? Maybe we needed this. So I guess I'm just really happy that it is being understood more widely.
Looking at consumer sentiment and what's going on in the space at the moment, how important is education to you, and sort of what steps are you taking or partners of yours taking to sort of
explain self-custody and the advantages of it and the responsibilities that are required as well.
Yeah, education is, it's how we get more people on board. It's in everybody's best interest to educate as many people as we can on these topics. There's a lot of, and this is like the sinister side of crypto, there's a lot of bad actors giving false information out there. So, A, we need to reduce the noise that they are making by increasing the amount of good quality education. So that's that one of the reasons. The second reason is just more cooler projects come out, right? This is an ecosystem we're trying to build. So many hands make light work. So let's bring on more projects. If you think your idea is too small, look at Albert's project. Like, what is? It's just we're gonna hold your money until we see that somebody sent you crypto. That's also very boring and easy, you know, easy, right? Topic to solve, but so don't, but don't think that your idea is too small to solve. There's a merit to it.
I think as an Albert representative and complete advocate. Now, or sorry, I'm not a representative, but I'm an advocate for Elbate.
We can work on the
representative. Yeah, we'll just get an Elbate t-shirt. Elbate advocate, I think like companies like Elbate will give that additional sense of security, comfort, the tools that are, can it, you know, essentially lay the foundation of a true peer-to-peer exchange without having to go through a centralized exchange or kind of catching wind of these stories of Quadriga or other cryptocurrency exchanges that just disappear, or, you know, like you've got even instances in the DeFi space like Luna, you know, and these tragedies happen. But like you said, these dominoes kind of need to fall to say it's not about having one big conglomerate body. Mm-hmm. It's about using these multiple people with brilliant minds like you guys have at Elbate and just putting together really practical tools that can help people exchange and trade with each other seamlessly, safely. Escrow contracts, brilliant. Right, and it doesn't. You're not trying to reinvent the wheel. You're just trying to give tools that people can use, like Elbate.
Yeah.
Amazing work, amazing work. And that kind of leads me into my next question: is your growth mindset? Can we dive in a little bit into how you are approaching, I guess, growing Elbate, and how you are internally your internal kind of narrative here as where you see Elbate going? How you and your brother are building this together today? Because obviously you've gone through a massive growth. Just recently, having appointed a new board of directors, I would love to dive into that a bit later. Imagine as two young entrepreneurs that might have been a little bit, I'm only speaking from experience, but I'm talking about other working with other people. It's, you're like, yes, many hands make light work, but you're quite, you know, it's your baby. Do you know what I mean? You're quite protective and you want to make sure that it's growing, right? And so just diving into that, like, do you have any comments about a mindset in growing a company like Elbate and with those practical tools?
Yeah. So our attitude, because this is our fifth year, 4.5 years in, comparing Elbate's journey to other Australian homegrown exchanges, our success has been quite slow comparatively. But that's because our idea was just so radically different. It needed to be slower. We needed to test it out. And so our whole mindset has always been, we need to test it out. So we've been in MVP stage for a while. And then we've done over $50 million worth of transactions just in that MVP stage.
$50 million right? In an MVP stage.
Yeah. So that's how we were like, okay, it's time to make this website nice.
It's a lot of lines to be looking at.
Yeah. So we're like, okay, it's time now to make it actually ready for the masses. When you're building a software startup and especially if it's a fintech, there are so many security protocols you need to look at. It's really, I really think it's immoral to want to make it go from idea to mass so quickly. Okay. There will be technical loopholes, and there will be money lost.
Just gonna happen.
So take it slow. Make sure it's really well built.
Yeah.
So we're now at the stage that we're extremely confident in the product, and we're looking and seeking partnerships. Like I said, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We're trying to look for integrations and work with other builders that have built, you know, interesting in projects that we could be like, okay, we've got Fiat on rails, right? Let's work together.
Guys, did you hear that? Elbate is looking for strategic partners, Fiat onboarding on rails, and seamless peer-to-peer exchanges without having a centralized body.
How are you feeling in the crypto winter? Is it demoralizing? Is it exciting? Is it clearing out the riffraff? Mm. What are your thoughts? What are your experiences?
Yeah, it's so interesting. My brother, my business partner, we were quite confident that we wanted to scale this project. So we planned for him to do a tour of the world, right? And that world tour was exactly coinciding with the crypto crash. It's like headline after headline.
Oh, God.
Hilarious, right? And every single conversation that he approached, it was hilarious. They're like, is this... They're telling him, going, why are we having this conversation? Have you not seen the next... that other crypto exchange that's just gone bust? So why are we having... You know? So funny. So... Yeah, the winter has been changes the plans.
Yeah.
Right? We're yeah. redrawing the plan right now. But that's what you have to be when you're a startup.
You gotta be flexible.
Yeah, you have to. Otherwise you won't survive, because there will always be market ups and downs. So this is now our second market down. We have a much larger team, so we're a team of 15 people. So it's a lot more on the line. So, but the thing is, the way we've mapped out our growth has always been really quite conservative. We always planned for a crypto winter. So this was already planned. So that's why we're a lot more calmer than maybe some of our peers are. And
part of the strategy. You plan for it. You're ready. Exactly. Great.
If you plan for the bad scenarios, there's a really cool saying that my brother says, and I love it so much. So he's really into sports cars. So the Formula One racing, he says, there's this one superstar guy, I don't know his name, but he's saying the reason why he's so good is because he's the best when the weather conditions are bad.
I love that.
Prepare for the worst.
Yeah. That same mentality.
I think the same will go for your brother now. He's just done a world tour.
Yeah.
You know,
when the weather's bad. Exactly.
Weather's horrible. He's coming back a stellar businessman, salesperson, entrepreneur. He's come back with some serious stripes.
Yeah.
Shout out.
I'd love to meet him one day.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So when you're in Melbourne, we'll do another one of these.
Definitely. Definitely. You've got a team of 15 people, right? 15 people requires incredible leadership. I think that goes without saying. And you guys have an A-grade team because they see an A-grade opportunity with you guys and with your company. So I just want to kind of dive into, did you find yourself naturally assuming a leadership kind of role, or has this been a focus of yours to try and hone and develop? Or did it kind of, you know, like I said, did you find you naturally assumed these responsibilities, and this was refined as you grew over the course of 5 years, as well as your brother?
Well, that's the thing, right? With growing slowly, you can actually even mature yourself. My first ego that I had to demolish was the fact that I was so technically minded. And that's all that I labeled myself. I am an engineer. If you're wanting to create a business, you have to wear so many hats. It is irresponsible to be like, no, I'm only taking care of this one thing.
It doesn't work.
Who's going to take care of the other things?
Yeah, yeah.
So that was the first one that I kicked off, but it took me so long to get over that. The fact that we grew slowly meant that I also matured through this whole journey as well. Yeah, I don't know if that's useful for anybody.
Well, absolutely. You're a young female with big ideas and big ambitions that could execute on her idea. your idea and your brother's idea to ultimately create LBAIT.
Yeah.
And I guess, like, really kind of extrapolating on that, would you, I guess, have any advice for young females looking to kind of, that are interested in startups, interested in entrepreneurship? I know that there's many are out there, and they're building and they're kind of working out where they can fit in, and not trying to give themselves labels, but trying to be the person who can wear many hats and succeed and flourish. Do you have a North Star that you refer to that kind of keeps you on track, or any kind of advice that you could kind of share for that audience?
That's a really big passion of mine. We live in Australia. We are such a densely educated population. I think we've got an issue where this is the issue that I'm labeling it. It's the hardworking, humble Australian. It is an issue.
I love it. Yeah. Okay?
It is an issue because what it has created and what we've seen right now is the number of startups that we have in Australia is significantly less than what there is in US and other, you know, higher ego populations.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Do you agree?
Yeah. Yeah, like absolutely.
We're seriously smart here, and we don't have as many people creating their own stuff. I want to see more of it because we can, and we've got really awesome solutions. We just need to change the culture a little bit in Australia, I think. It's getting there. It's improved so much in these past 5 years. It really has. There are communities out there. And this Web3 community is just been an awesome, awesome, awesome add to that, an ingredient that we really needed. What you guys are doing is really useful for that, because it is going to encourage more people to come on board to space.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Cool. Thank you. Appreciate it's a big challenge, but I think it's something that is really exciting to take on. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on NFTs? Do you own any NFTs? Are they of interest to you? Do you see them bringing in a different side of the market into Web3?
Mm. So NFTs, I don't own any NFTs.
We gotta fix that.
I've been on the scout.
Send us your wallet address.
I've been on the scout for a project that that has something that I care about. I'm still on the lookout for it, just for that community aspect, right? And there's a really awesome friend of mine that's working on a really cool NFT project, and it's about land ownership and giving credit back to ethical farming to farmers. So giving them financial incentive to farm in a way that's good for the land.
Wow.
Right, because right now farming is actually incentivized quick harvest,
yep.
And it's all degrading our soils.
Yep.
And it's happening because there's a financial incentive to do it that way. We just need to shift the incentive for the other way. And NFTs have a really awesome application for that.
It's amazing how they can shift the economic structure of any industry, including farming. I haven't heard that one before. That's amazing. What's the name? Do you know the name of the project off the top of your head?
Yeah, so it's my beautiful friend. Her name is Sam, and her project is called Earth.io.
We're just talking about how awesome on the flight up this morning. We're just looking over these just beautiful ranges and little plots of land along the way, and I was just like, yeah, one day some regenerative agriculture would be really cool. I think there's a lot of practical applications for, I mean, if they can do it with energy, I'm sure we can work it out with with land management, especially engaging the traditional owners as well. I'm sure they would definitely have some valuable input.
Being a female entrepreneur is one incredible thing. Being a female entrepreneur in the Web3 space is another. Have you seen any challenges with that? Are you seeing more females come into the space? Do you have anything that you want to say to females that might be thinking about getting into the space but might be a little bit intimidated because it is dominated by males at this point in time?
Mm-hmm. And this is another reason for why I'm such an advocate for high quality education. The reason why I feel that crypto and Web3 is highly dominated by the male population at the moment is because of just where the forums that they were spoken about in the early days. The forums were gaming channels, you're on a Discord, like that is tech bros, right?
Yes, male, like, male orientated. Yeah. Right.
And it's not because women are not interested in these topics. It's just because of where the starting days where it was spoken about was in spaces where men were usually in, right? So the more diverse the education platforms are, we all absolutely see a natural adoption from women as well, because this is an interesting piece of technology. So I think that's the reason why there is a gender divide at the moment. So my advice to other females in non-Web3 at the moment is there's a lot of opportunity. It's always about connecting to the community first. So find an online community, just Google it, Twitter it, whatever it is, and make a friend there and just start conversation, because that's how crypto even started, just conversations. And look at where it is now.
Does Elbeat have a Discord or a Twitter where people could reach out if they're interested, or just kind of, maybe, I know, understand you'd be definitely a little bit busy, but if you just kind of get involved and kind of have a wet their feet?
Yeah, so for me personally, I'm always online, so anybody can reach out to me. LinkedIn, I'm more on LinkedIn, to be honest, than Twitter. I'm getting now into Twitter. There is a whole heap of craziness on Twitter. I did not know. Yeah. I've only been on Twitter for like 6 months now. I'm like, what?
Yeah, Twitter. Were you active during last year when everyone was just going nuts? And then it's just like following kind of human psychology, one, on a chart, and then two, that being articulated through... 40 character tweets. People trying to communicate their sheer joy or sheer horror. It's just this. I've never seen anything like it. Then the memes that kind of came out of that definitely...
But it's actually such a great platform because it's so accessible by everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It's not a Discord channel where like things will get lost and you have to find the link to a specific... community, right? I actually do like that it's one platform, all projects are talking about something there. So it's actually quite powerful. I think that's why it's popular for crypto. It's like a conglomeration of everybody's projects.
Yeah,
100%. Yeah, compared to Discord was a crazy learning curve for me personally.
Yeah.
Just getting used to it, and just, especially on a busy Discord, it's just so hectic. There's so much going on. You can't keep up. You don't know where you are. People are saying GM. What does GN mean then? I don't know what's going on here. I do understand it can be quite intimidating. But yeah, a little bit of education can go a long way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking on the education side, we at Elbeat, we're like, all right, there's DAOs that are coming out. There are all of these DeFi and other things that are coming out. How do we learn? How do we keep up, like, with our own project and then also other projects? Because, you know, we've been at it for so many years now. There will be projects out there. So what we've decided is we've gone, all right, we need to dedicate 20% of the week to dabbling into other projects. So we had a go at creating our own DAO. The horrors that were uncovered by the process of creating a DAO at the moment is, you actually can't make a genuine DAO right now.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
Yeah, we were just talking about that. They're not decentralized, autonomous. They're what was the word that Ash from Juby DAO has used? Getting people to vote in unison. It's like, well, the proposal was, it's like, vote on what you don't like.
Yeah.
Do you know? Like, just let's just go the opposite way. Let's not all make decisions together to make a decision, but let's just say, we want to do this. If you oppose it, vote.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite... It's like, that makes sense. If people complain, that's when they have a bigger voice, you know. But
yeah. But again, it's like, oh, DAOs have this great marketing label.
Oh, it's,
but
yeah.
So much needs to be built. So that's another whole big problem that people can contribute to. Yeah. Like, that's awesome. So, yeah, that's how you keep up with the space, right? You always are in research mode, always.
Yeah. It's exhausting, because that's what we were saying earlier. It's just, well, it's exhausting, but it's like a labor of love, I think. We should love hearing about what people are doing, creating, innovating. I've definitely noticed a lot of female builders and innovators really taking charge in creating spaces, creating communities, understanding how people can get involved, where their strengths are, especially Pamela, Betty from Deadfellas, many more to list from that. But like, just as a couple, they... just fundamentally understand like the ideal of what a DAO could be and how to kind of get people and shuffle them in and then really kind of make that happen. That was definitely something I've noticed in the last, I guess, 3 months. It's pretty crazy. Samira, as we're wrapping up, could you tell us a little bit about the typical day in a 25-year-old fintech CTO operations? Do you have a funny dance routine? Do you have a special coffee mix? Or do you have any kind of mental model you like to like revert to or bolster yourself on to really kind of get through your day, your week, your month, and your year?
Wow. I've changed up my routine so many times because I want to find the perfect routine. Pre-COVID, I was so militant. I was running every morning. I did very on like my diaries were on Excels. You know, it was just too much. And then COVID hit, and it just the mundaneness was so boring. Like I was just in my house for days on end. I spent lockdown in Melbourne, so it's 2 years of staying at home. So I needed actually spontaneity in my routine. So I scrapped the whole routine all out, and I just went with the flow. That was so much better for me. So now I'm trying to unlearn that.
Yeah.
So trying to unlearn that. And so the typical day for anyone how do I answer this? Because the stage of the startup that we are in at the moment is so drastically different from where we started. Before it was, I was coding for 3 hours in the morning and then I would do an hour of networking like in the outside. So have a coffee with someone in the industry, something like that. And then 2 hours of doing legal work and other paperwork, the mundane stuff. It was composed like that. But now I actually have the freedom to block out specific strategic types of days, right? So I've got the luxury now to not have to do everything in one day.
Cool. Do you still use your Excel diary, or have you got a plethora of productivity apps like I do?
Scrapped.
Yeah, scrapped. Nice.
Relearning. On the hunt for everything new.
Yeah, cool. Cool, cool. So you're off the Notion, the Todoist, Atlassian apps, all the productivity apps. Wonderful, wonderful. I think you have said some extremely valuable gems throughout this podcast. Really thank you for joining us today. I'm really looking forward to seeing Elbate grow, you grow and succeed and continually innovate and build some truly awesome products for people.
Thank you so much.
Can you tell us where we can find you?
Where you can find me. So LinkedIn is my go-to platform, but cool. I'm now on Twitter as well. So let's
join.
What are the
join
handles
us.
For those?
Samira Tolo, both all of them.
Mm-hmm. So. And for Elbate?
Elbate, yes. So Elbate, if anybody wants to reach out regarding Elbate, we do have a email that you can connect us through on our support channel. So just go to the website. There's a support channel, and I monitor it sometimes as well. So I can see your tickets.
Mm-hmm. Cool. That's
and
Elbate.
Handles for Elbate?
Elbate.io for
cool.
everything.
Amazing. Cool.
Amazing.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for coming to Brisbane. I hope you enjoy.
Thank you, Samira.
We definitely will.
Yeah.
We definitely will.
Awesome. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you.